News. Saturdays at 7 a.m., it's Guidepost Magazine, followed at 8 a.m. with the week's Sunday school lessons. Those are repeated Sundays beginning at 4 a.m. Then Sunday mornings at 6, it's Catholic Today. And at 7, Christianity Today. On Recording Library of West Texas Radio. Read by listening.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 60 and clear. Tonight, it will be cloudy with a low in the low 50s. Then, tomorrow, partly cloudy with a high in the low 60s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the upper 40s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 1 p.m.
Good afternoon. Welcome to your coronavirus update for Friday, January 29th, 2021 from the Recording Library of West Texas. I'm Michael. Coming up in the next few minutes, we'll be reading these articles. Johnson & Johnson's single-shot vaccine shows 66% efficacy in trial, but 85% efficacy against severe disease. Johnson & Johnson official praises company's COVID-19 vaccine. This vaccine is for everyone. Johnson & Johnson's vaccine shows no safety concern, company official says. Expert explains why he'd take the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. Infectious disease expert says these are really, in my mind, three almost equivalent vaccines. Novavax says COVID-19 vaccine is 89% effective in UK trial, but less so in South Africa. Israel's health data suggests Pfizer and Moderna vaccines may be more effective than we thought. CDC director, hopeful U.S. schools can reopen soon as a result of teacher vaccinations and mitigation efforts. Only half of COVID-19 vaccines delivered to states have been used, CDC data shows. Here's one reason why. CDC director says U.S. is ramping up surveillance and sequencing of COVID-19 variants. Long COVID still puzzles doctors, but treatment is possible. Fauci says Biden's push to reopen schools in 100 days may not happen. First, we'll take a look at the numbers for this Friday. A note, I'm using several sources for these numbers. Ironically, over the past several weeks and over the past month or so, 6 weeks, it is becoming more and more difficult to obtain these numbers, partially because Ector County is no longer publishing numbers every day. So the Odessa American has no numbers to show. And also it's difficult to get the hospital numbers, but I'm using several different sources and I think we can extrapolate all of these numbers that we're concerned with. This number is from the Texas Health and Human Services. For Ector County, confirmed cases, 6,954. Probable cases, 6,478. Fatalities, 293. Estimated active cases, 1,659. Estimated recovered, 11,480. And from the Johns Hopkins University dashboard for Ector County, it's reporting that there have been 42 new cases since yesterday. From the Texas 2036 website for Ector County, it's showing that there are 158 confirmed COVID-19 patients as of January 27th. All of these numbers are from January 27th. 16% of all hospitalizations are COVID-19 related. 35.3% all beds availability. 26.2% ICU beds availability. Now for Midland County, again back to the Texas Health and Human Services website. Confirmed cases, 15,341. Fatalities, 212. Estimated active cases, 2,564. Estimated recovered, 12,565. Johns Hopkins University's website shows in Midland County there have been 110 new cases since the previous day. I can also give you the county fatality rate for Midland County. On this page, it shows 1.43% county fatality rate And for Ector County, it's showing a 2.18% fatality rate. Back to Midland County from the Texas 2036 website. Numbers as of January 27th, 158 confirmed COVID-19 patients in the hospital. 16% of all hospitalizations are COVID-related. Beds availability, 35.3%. ICU beds availability, 26.2%. And now from Texas. These numbers are from the Texas Tribune. Texas surpasses 2 million confirmed COVID-19 cases. Average new cases decreased by 3,214 cases compared with the 7-day average a week ago. On January 28th, 14,445 new confirmed cases and 2,929 new probable cases were reported. Hospitalizations decreased by 1,184 patients compared with a week ago. As of January 28th, 12,380 Texans are hospitalized for coronavirus. Average new deaths increased by 17 deaths compared with the 7-day average a week ago. On January 28th, 471 new deaths were reported. Now, we'll take a look at U.S. numbers, and then we'll go to coronavirus briefs. The U.S. reported 164,665 new COVID-19 cases and 3,872 virus-related deaths on Thursday, according to a tally by Johns Hopkins. That raises the national total to at least 25,762,726 confirmed infections and 433,067 fatalities since the beginning of the pandemic. At least 48,386,275 vaccine doses have been distributed, and at least 26,193,682 shots administered, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. 2020 was the worst year for U.S. economic growth since World War II, as the pandemic ravaged factories, businesses, and households. The European Commission has published its contract with drug maker AstraZeneca after a heated dispute over production delays. EU regulator recommends approval for AstraZeneca vaccine. German officials expect EU approval on AstraZeneca vaccine without age restrictions, despite advice on over 65s. The World Health Organization team meets Chinese scientists in Wuhan. New variants could add up to 85,000 COVID-19 deaths to U.S. toll by May, an influential model forecasts. A scathing new documentary from HBO alleges a Chinese coronavirus cover-up, which the film says led to an untold number of deaths. South Korea detects more than 300 COVID-19 cases linked to religious schools. And now here are today's articles. Most of these articles at the beginning are related to Johnson & Johnson's announcement this morning about their vaccine. The first is Johnson & Johnson's single-shot vaccine shows 66% efficacy in trial, but 85% efficacy against severe disease. From CNN's Michael Nettleman, Elizabeth Cohen, and Maggie Fox. Johnson & Johnson's single-shot COVID-19 vaccine was shown to be 66% effective in preventing moderate and severe disease in a global Phase 3 trial, but 85% effective against severe disease, the company announced Friday. The vaccine was 72% effective against moderate and severe disease in the U.S., the company said. It's a striking difference from vaccines from Pfizer, BioNTech, and Moderna, and it may give pause to people uncertain about which vaccine to get or when they can get one. The vaccines already on the market in the U.S. are about 95% effective overall against symptomatic COVID-19, with perhaps even higher efficacy against severe cases. Experts say the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, developed by its vaccine arm, Janssen, will still be useful against the pandemic in the United States and around the world, even if the single-dose vaccine doesn't become the first choice for many. For Johnson & Johnson, efficacy against moderate and severe ranged from one country to another, 72% in the U.S., 66% in Latin America, and 57% in South Africa, This was measured from starting 1 month after the shot. In South Africa, 95% of cases in the trial were due to a variant known as B1351, which is known to be more contagious and carries mutations that make the virus less susceptible to the antibody immune response, including antibodies prompted by vaccination. With that variant, we have a lower protection against milder forms of COVID than we did in the United States, where there were more typical circulating variants. Dr. Mathi Mammen, the company's global head of research and development, told CNN's chief medical correspondent, Dr. Sanjay Gupta. Even those who got moderate cases of COVID-19 in the trial tended to develop a milder course and fewer symptoms, he added. But for Mammen, the key result was how effective the vaccine was at preventing severe disease, regardless of variant or age group. Across all geographies, across all variants, we see 85% protection against severe disease, he said. That trend increased over time, with no severe cases in the vaccinated group after day 49, according to the company. Even 1 month after the shot, all hospitalizations and deaths occurred in the placebo group. The results are based on an analysis of more than 44,000 participants in 8 countries, with 468 total cases of COVID-19 split between those receiving the vaccine or placebo. The results have not been published in a peer-reviewed journal, but the company said it plans to do so in the coming weeks. Johnson & Johnson is expected to apply to the U.S. Food and Drug Administration next week for emergency use authorization, which Mammen said could come by late February. Johnson & Johnson official praises company's COVID-19 vaccine. This vaccine is for everyone. From CNN's Jacqueline Howard. Johnson & Johnson officials praised their vaccine's 85% efficacy against severe COVID-19 during a phone call with reporters on Friday morning. The call was held along with officials from the National Institutes of Health. Our top line result is that we have 85% protection against disease that matters, disease that causes people to feel particularly ill at home, and results in seeking medical attention after that, Dr. Mathi Mammen, Janssen's global head of research and development, said during the call. Janssen is the vaccine arm of Johnson & Johnson. We have really good efficacy. Same level of protection across all age groups, from the very young to the middle age to the very old. We have the same efficacy across race and ethnicity, Mammen said. This vaccine is for everyone. Johnson & Johnson's single-shot COVID-19 vaccine was shown to be 66% effective in preventing moderate and severe disease in a global Phase 3 trial, but 85% effective against severe disease, the company announced Friday. Johnson & Johnson's vaccine shows no safety concern, company official says, from CNN's Jacqueline Howard. A Johnson & Johnson official on Friday, described the safety profile of the company's coronavirus vaccine as vanilla and shows no reason for concern. It's a really plain vanilla safety result, Dr. Mathi Mammen, Janssen's global head of research and development, said during a phone call with reporters. Mammen said during the call that there were no incidents of anaphylaxis and no imbalances between the vaccine and placebo when it came to safety. What we do see is the standard in a few percent of people, the standard transient fever, sometimes pain in the arm, sometimes a little bit of fatigue, Mammen said. When asked about whether deaths had occurred, Mammen responded that there were deaths in the trial 28 days after the vaccination, but they were among those who received a placebo. Expert explains why he'd take the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, from CNN's Andrian Vogt. Dr. Paul Offit, director of the Vaccine Education Center at Children's Hospital in Philadelphia, said he is eager to review all the data from Johnson & Johnson's vaccine. The current reality is we don't have enough mRNA vaccine. We have another vaccine in Johnson & Johnson's. Again, we need to look at the data at the FDA level, but we have another vaccine which is highly effective at keeping you out of the hospital. That is an advantage in a situation where we don't have enough vaccines, so I think people need to consider that, said Offit, member of the FDA's Vaccines and Related Biological Products Advisory Committee. Were it me, were I not able to get the mRNA vaccine, and I only had the choice of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, I would take it, assuming that the data looked good as we look at the FDA. I would take it in a second, knowing there's probably a second dose trial out there, which is likely to show it's even more effective. The data overall are encouraging, in that it can prevent you from being hospitalized and dying. Infectious disease expert says, these are really, in my mind, three almost equivalent vaccines, from CNN's Aditi Sengal. After Johnson & Johnson announced its COVID-19 vaccine's efficacy data, infectious disease expert Michael Osterholm says he assesses the vaccine to be equivalent to Moderna and Pfizer, based on the study released. If I were in the general public right now, my first reaction would be, I want the one that protects me the most. You know, we haven't really done a good job, I think, of explaining to the public that the immune response that occurs with the vaccine sometimes takes months to mature, he told CNN, adding that the results from Johnson & Johnson are really what happened in the 2 months after the last dose was administered. He highlighted that the vaccine study shows that the protection got better the farther you got out from the vaccination, and that actually, if we had followed this several more months, it might have been an equal, if not superior, vaccine to what we're seeing with Moderna and Pfizer. These are, really in my mind, three almost equivalent vaccines. The advantage here is that the Johnson & Johnson vaccine is much more stable. We can keep it in our refrigerators longer. We don't have to worry about the extreme temperature issues. And for many clinics out there, this is going to be the ideal vaccine to have. One dose, stable vaccine, use it, he said. Osterholm explained that we're on a vaccine journey at the moment, but there are no concerns around safety. We're going to be learning a lot about these vaccines over the course of the next 3 to 6 months, he said. We'll have to keep sorting this out. Not sorting out to look at safety. Not sorting it out at whether you should get it or not. Get it. But we're going to be constantly reevaluating it. What's the best way to protect the most people over time? And that may be that you will be getting a booster dose on a routine basis with one or more vaccines. I know it's confusing right now, but I think get your first dose now. Protect as many people as possible. And now we'll move on to other vaccine-related news. Novavax says COVID-19 vaccine is 89% effective in UK trial, but less so in South Africa. By CNN's Jacqueline Howard, Isa Soares, and Lauren Syed Morehouse. A new COVID-19 vaccine from Novavax was 89% effective and appeared to offer protection against some variants of the coronavirus in a clinical trial conducted in the UK, the American biotech firm has announced. Based on results from a phase 3 trial conducted in the UK, the vaccine was found to be 95.6% effective against the original coronavirus and 85.6% effective against the variant first detected in the UK. However, the vaccine appeared to be less effective against a variant first identified in South Africa. The shot showed 60% efficacy among those without HIV in a separate phase 2B study conducted in that country, the company said. The company's vaccine, known as NVX-CoV-2373, is the first vaccine to demonstrate not only high clinical efficacy against COVID-19, but also significant clinical efficacy against both the rapidly emerging UK and South Africa variants, Stanley Erck, Novavax president and CEO, said in the announcement. NRX-CoV-2373 has the potential to play an important role in solving this global public health crisis, he said. Novavax is also currently conducting a Phase 3 clinical study in the United States and Mexico, and a Phase 1-2 continuation in the U.S. and Australia, data from which are expected as soon as the early first quarter of 2021. Israel's health data suggests Pfizer and Moderna vaccines may be more effective than we thought. From CNN's Amir Tal and Elizabeth Cohen. New data from the Israel's Ministry of Health suggests the Pfizer-BioNTech and Moderna COVID-19 vaccines may be even more effective than previously thought. The data, which looked at more than 700,000 fully vaccinated people in Israel, found that only 0.04% of people contracted COVID-19, according to the head of Israel's Ministry of Health, Dr. Sharon Alroy-Preis, at a press conference on Thursday. The type of vaccine Israel has mostly used is the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine, with a small number of doses from Moderna. The two vaccines use the same technology and in clinical trials were found to be about 95% effective. Some background. Israel began its vaccination campaign on December 20th. The data released Thursday looked at 715,425 vaccinated people who were at least 1 week past their second dose, giving the vaccines time to kick in and provide immunity. Of those people, only 317 became sick with COVID-19 and 16 people were hospitalized. The data sampled many more people than the Pfizer and Moderna Phase 3 clinical trials. Approximately 75,000 people participated in those trials, with half receiving the vaccine and half receiving a placebo. The two vaccines have been rolled out in several countries, including the U.S., Canada, and some European nations. The U.K. was the first country in the world to inoculate patients with the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine in December last year. Only half of COVID-19 vaccines delivered to states have been used, CDC data shows. Here's one reason why. From CNN's John Bonifield. A possible explanation is emerging for why federal data shows only about half of the vaccine supply delivered in the U.S. has been administered. The nation's vaccine distribution figures have baffled observers for weeks, with states claiming they need more vaccine, when the data indicates they still have many doses on hand. Health officials for President Joe Biden sought to explain on Wednesday, at least in part. Speaking at a media briefing, Dr. Rochelle Walensky, director of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, said not all vaccine that has been delivered to states is available for inserting into people's arms. White House COVID-19 response coordinator Jeff Zients took that explanation a step further. Some of what the states have right now is inventory to do the very, very important second shot, Zients said. I think it's important that when you're looking at states' inventories, that you recognize that some of that inventory is being held for the very important second shot. Walensky, when asked by CNN chief medical correspondent Dr. Sanjay Gupta on Wednesday if it is the right approach for states to hold on to COVID-19 vaccine that is intended for second doses, declined to directly answer the question. An administration official on Wednesday told CNN states should not be holding back second doses and that it is not the Biden administration's guidance. The Pfizer and Moderna COVID-19 vaccines currently available for emergency use in the U.S. require two doses. A federal dashboard tracks the nation's distribution of these vaccines. The data shows how many doses of the vaccine has been delivered to each state, but it does not differentiate between first and second doses. CDC director says U.S. is ramping up surveillance and sequencing of COVID-19 variants. From CNN's Adrian Vogt. U.S. Centers of Disease Control and Prevention Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky said that officials continue to remain concerned about COVID-19 variants. The U.S. is rapidly ramping up surveillance and sequencing activities as we work to closely monitor and identify variants as they emerge, she said during a White House coronavirus briefing. We also know viruses mutate, and they tend to mutate in ways that are advantageous to the virus. We expected this, and this is why I feel compelled to underscore for you the need for each of us to remain steadfast in our commitment to taking all of the appropriate steps to protect ourselves and our communities, she said. Walensky said that now is not the time to travel, and she encouraged all Americans to wear masks, practice social distancing, and get vaccinated when it is available. More on the variants. At least four coronavirus variants have been identified. Scientists are not surprised to see the coronavirus changing and evolving. It's what viruses do, after all. And with so much unchecked spread across the U.S. and other parts of the world, the virus is getting plenty of opportunity to do just that. What scientists most fear is that one will mutate to the point that it causes more severe disease, bypass the ability of tests to detect it, or evades the protection provided by vaccination. While some of the new variants appear to have changes that look like they could affect immune response, it's only by a matter of degree. Long COVID still puzzles doctors, but treatment is available. From CNN's Lauren Mascarenhas. Medical professionals are working to understand more about a condition they are calling long COVID among patients who experience lingering symptoms months after recovering from the coronavirus. Persons with long COVID often present reporting persistent severe fatigue, headaches, and brain fog, which is defined as mild subjective cognitive impairment, approximately 4 weeks after acute illness. Dr. Alfonso Hernandez Romeo, a member of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's CDC COVID-19 response team, said during a CDC briefing on Thursday. A study recently published in the journal The Lancet found that of 1,733 coronavirus patients treated in the Chinese city of Wuhan, 76% were still experiencing at least one symptom 6 months after their symptoms began. Doctors have reported that the severity of COVID-19 illness may have little impact on whether patients experience long COVID symptoms, Hernandez Ramiu said. Dr. Allison Navis, an assistant professor at the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai in New York City, said one of the most common symptoms of long COVID is called brain fog. Brain fog is a symptom. It is not a diagnosis, and it means many different things to different people, Navis said. Oftentimes, it's a combination of short-term memory issues, concentration, or word-finding speech difficulty. Navis said, brain fog does not appear to have a clear connection to the severity of COVID-19 infection, age, or other risk factors. She said doctors have observed these symptoms in younger patients, including children and adolescents, who had mild coronavirus and were previously healthy. In the absence of a broad diagnosis or treatment plan for people who experience long COVID, doctors have been targeting specific symptoms for treatment, Navis said. CDC Director, hopeful U.S. schools can reopen soon as a result of teacher vaccinations and mitigation efforts. From CNN's Naomi Thomas. U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky said on Friday that she's hopeful that schools can reopen safely by relying on a combination of teacher vaccination and mitigation measures. In most states, if not all states, teachers should be eligible for vaccination now, Walensky said on NBC's Savannah Guthrie on Today. Even if they can't get vaccinated yet, Walensky said, they should be early in queue, so they should be getting it soon. Walensky also referenced data released by the CDC earlier this week and looked at how K-12 schools in Wisconsin prevented spread of COVID-19. We need to have the mitigation efforts that have been, demonstrated to work. Masking, distancing, low-density classrooms. That has demonstrated that we can open schools safely, she said. Coupled with teacher vaccination, I hope in the weeks ahead would suggest that we can open schools safely, she said. But she noted schools need funding and the resources to make sure that they can get there. And now our last story is kind of a counterbalance to the previous story. Fauci says Biden's push to reopen schools in 100 days may not happen. From CNN's Andrea Diaz and Paul LeBlanc. Dr. Anthony Fauci, the nation's leading infectious disease expert, cautioned Thursday that President Joe Biden's push to reopen most schools within 100 days may not happen as the U.S. continues to grapple with high COVID-19 transmission. The president is taking very seriously the issue, both from the student standpoint and from the teacher standpoint, Fauci said during a virtual event sponsored by the National Education Association. He really wants to and believes that the schools need to reopen in the next 100 days, essentially all the K to 8 schools within 100 days. That's the goal. That may not happen because there may be mitigating circumstances, but what he really wants to do is everything within his power to help to get that. Biden is pushing Congress to approve another $170 billion for K through 12 schools, colleges, and universities to help them operate safely in person or facilitate remote learning. Congress approved $82 billion in aid for schools in December, which Biden has said he views as a down payment. The new funding would be part of a broad $1.9 trillion relief package that would also include expanding unemployment benefits and direct stimulus checks. And that is your coronavirus update for our Friday, January 29th, 2021, from the Recording Library of West Texas. I'm Michael, and coming up next, we're going to end the week by bringing you some Hollywood and celebrity news with Entertainment Weekly. At 2 o'clock, we'll bring you national news with USA Today. At 3 o'clock, local news. Here are some of the articles that our volunteers are reading. From the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Governor stands up to Biden. Abbott visits Midland-Odessa, signs executive order to challenge federal action. Governor comes to aid of energy industry. Coronavirus. Abbott on Peyton's criticisms. Economy was marginally impacted by COVID. Odessa American's front page also extensively writing about Abbott's visit. Defending Texas workers. Abbott promises energy industry protection. Governor orders state agencies to use all lawful powers and tools to resist Biden's restrictions. And Congressman Pfluger speaks after busy first month. Those stories and more are coming up at 3 o'clock. At 6 tonight, the Wall Street Journal. And then at 7 o'clock tonight, take a break from all this heavy news by listening to On the Lighter Side with some very humorous writings from some very funny writers and authors. On the Lighter Side tonight at 7 o'clock. That wraps it up for our portion of the day. We'll be back Monday at 1 o'clock. In the meanwhile, be safe and have a great weekend.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 61 and clear. Tonight, it will be cloudy with a low in the low 50s. Then, tomorrow, partly cloudy with a high in the low 60s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the upper 40s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
This program is made available to the IAAIS program share and was recorded at the audio reading service of the Ellen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana, for people with print impairments.
Welcome. This is Entertainment Weekly, the January 2021 issue, and I'm your reader, Elizabeth Smith, with the audio reading service of the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Today, I will start where I left off, and it's the best TV shows of 2020, and we did the Better Call Saul, and now we're going to move on to number two of the best of the year, and that's Ted Lasso on Apple TV+. A coach, an American optimist in London, arrived just when we needed him most. In a fraught year, Ted Lasso delivered 10 hilarious episodes about team building, emotional intelligence, the unrelenting power of human decency, and a simple truth. Ain't nobody in this room alone. Number 3, The Vow on HBO. An intimate look at that NXIVM organization. The vow is all the more powerful because it doesn't skip right to the sex cult headlines. Combining archival footage with in-the-moment recordings, the series plays like a real mind F, as Keith Raniere leads his followers from seduction to servitude. Number 4, The Crown on Netflix. An outsider, Emma Corrin's Diana, joins the family and is promptly tossed into the royal threshing machine by the Queen, the flawless Olivia Colman, and the system she upholds. By delving into the Windsor clan's true birthright, generational trauma, the drama delivers its most poignant season yet. Number 5, I Hate Susie by HBO Max. Dirty pics hacked out of a celeb's cell phone. From this tawdry scenario emerged a piercing exploration of modern womanhood, blending whimsy with painfully funny truths. Co-creators Billy Piper, who also stars, and Lucy Prebble tell a wholly unique story about the liberation that comes from total exposure. The Midnight Gospel on Netflix. Kirsten's wonderfully proclaimed our shared number one. Now I'll try to explain this soul-expanding cartoon odyssey about an interviewer seeking life's bequest in the digital cosmos. It's a heartfelt head trip with visual stuns every second. Clown Planet, Zombie Sing-Along, Cat Sailors, The Octopus Sheriff, Season 2, please. Pen 15 on Hulu. The best teen series ever? This Y2K throwback makes a good case. Co-creators Maya Erskine and Anna Konkol play 13-year-olds, a casting quirk that layers absurdist sorrow onto middle school antics. Let's be together forever, please, young Maya begs Anna. Seventh grade is awful, but their friendship is magic. The Plot Against America on HBO. A Jersey family who happens to be Jewish faces a president who happens to be fascist. Philip Roth's alternative 40s novel became a very 2020 tale of state-sponsored street violence and hatred gone viral. The miniseries ends on a tense election night. For America and America, that night never ends. I May Destroy You by HBO. Part consent noir, part millennial satire, part let's fly to Italy good hang, all inquisitions into sexual politics. Creators Michaela Cole turned her own assault horror into an antithesis of every young, cool metropolitan sitcom. The boldly surreal finale requires and rewards a dozen rewatches. The Worst of 2020. All Pain, No Gain. Quibi. Shame on any celebs who fronted this 10-figure boutique YouTube nobody wanted. Reese, Kiefer, Chance, Lena, Liam, Chrissy. Money isn't everything. Thankfully, Quibi was just a quick bite of nothing. Space Force on Netflix. The most cynical kind of TV making. Start with a title, prop it up with money and stars, hope that everything else, like a fully realized premise, falls into place. It didn't. Westworld on HBO. An evil Frenchman. Computer god spheres. Constant redeaths. And Aaron Paul is a bland new hero. The one-time robo-western rebooted into techno cheese. And The Blursts. Necessary trash. Emily in Paris on Netflix. At Entertainment Weekly, we don't hate watch. We're just brave enough to admit it when shows we love are objectively ridiculous. This soapy trifle was the creme de la creme of 2020 escapism. Double Shot at Love on MTV. A silly Jersey Shore offshoot about boozy sex buffoons. The romances, farewell critical dignity, were extremely compelling. Vinny and Maria, you're in love, you dopes. The best episodes of 2020. Of the hundreds of TV episodes this year, there are a few that made us hope, think, and when we needed it most, laugh. Number one, Low Key Happy on Insecure. Written by co-star Natasha Rothwell, the series' most romantic installment to date glimpses what could have been for Issa, played by Issa Rae, and Lawrence, played by Jay Ellis. Through brutally honest confessions and born identity puns, the exes realize they might still have a chance to be together or apart, low-key happy. Number two, Justice Time 2 on Evil. Season 1's chilling episode raises thought-provoking questions about revenge via Mike Coulter's priest in training and two Rwanda genocide survivors, pulls off a subversive twist involving a big bad Leland, played by Michael Emerson, and culminates in a devilishly wild final shot. Number three, On the Run, in What We Do in the Shadows. Matt Berry's last slow evades a vampire nemesis, played by Mark Hamill, having a blast, by going undercover as regular human bartender, Jackie Daytona, and fleeing to Pennsylvania. It rhymes with Transylvania. The toothpick-toting Daytona may be undead, but this ridiculous episode has a real beating heart. Great performances in 2020 TV. Matreyi Ramakrishnan, Never Have I Ever. Being a teenage girl is hard. Playing a brash, funny, angry, complicated young woman like Devi Vishwakumar's is damn near impossible. Never have we ever witnessed a star-making TV turn like Ramakrishnan, who does it all with miraculous ease. Anna Taylor-Joy in The Queen's Gambit. Taylor-Joy's Beth is an orphan, addict, and chess prodigy. But more than anything, thanks to Taylor-Joy's natural magnetism, Beth is impossible to ignore, enchanting even, making chess not just interesting to watch, but mesmerizing. Issa Rae on Insecure. In her sitcom's emotional fourth season, Rae believably balances new career excitement with frustrated friendship, plus a weight of years' struggle with romantic regret. Some actors can break your heart. Rae puts it back together. TED Talk. The genial soccer football coach on the Apple TV hit soothed many in 2020. So we asked Jason Sudeikis and writer Brett Goldstein, a.k.a. Roy Kent, What Would Ted Lasso Say? By Sarah Rodman. Jason Sudeikis knows better than to work for free, but it's clear that Ted Lasso isn't just a character for him. The aggressively enthusiastic, invasively kind, and obscenely decent title of the Apple TV Plus comedy about a fish-out-of-water American football coach in London clearly resides deeply in the former Saturday Night Live All-Stars heart. So, he can't help but try to comply when queried, if Coach Lasso could offer us all some advice, some words to take off the edge of the living nightmare that was 2020, what would he say? He thinks about it for a moment, fretting that he might come up with something he'll actually want to use in the second season of the series, set to begin filming in January. The show has also lassoed a third season. But then he is struck by something he has heard Michael J. Fox say. I do believe this is profound, says Jason, who paraphrases as Ted. When you're in a tough spot, don't assume the worst thing is going to happen, because on off chance it does, then you don't have to live it twice. Yes, Ted has his own phrases and whatnot, but he is, as we all are at the show, also a big fan of other people's pearls, so that's one that I believe he would quote. Brett Goldstein not only co-stars as the aging, gruff, but tender-hearted AFC Richmond player, Roy Kent, but is a series writer as well. Also gives the TED pep talk a shot, saying with a laugh, "It's been pretty effing crazy, and I don't normally swear, but thank God we're all still connected and together, even if it's just on Zoom." The best musical moments on TV. Smash and Glee may be long gone, but scripted shows are still finding ways to make our hearts sing. Article by Chancellor Eggard. High Fidelity. I believe when I fall in love, it will be forever. Needle-dropping Stevie Wonder's optimistic soul track in the season finale is a fantastic callback to the 2000 movie and feels even more bittersweet post-cancellation. Zoe's extraordinary playlist, Fight Song. Guest star Sandra Mae Frank and an ensemble of fellow deaf performers moving rendition in sign language of Rachel Platten's 2015 motivational pop anthem stands out among the show's musical numbers. DC's Legends of Tomorrow, Sad Feelings. While trapped on a Mr. Rogers neighborhood-like show, the titular screw-ups perform this original, funny, poignant ditty and, ironically, remind us that simply embracing your emotions can be a heroic act. Small X, Lovers Rocks, Silly Games. At a time when black pain is everywhere, director Steve McQueen gave us this heartening depiction of black joy as partygoers dance and sing along to Janet Kay's 1979 tune during an intoxicating 11-minute sequence. Music, the year's best albums in 2020. Number 1, Fetch the Bolt Cutters, Fiona Apple. Blast the music, bang it, bite it, bruise it, Apple commands over the clattering piano chords and thunderous drums of Fetch the Bolt Cutters' frenzied opener. Whenever you want to begin, begin. We don't have to go back to where we've been. Moving music forward has become a sort of specialty for the singer, whose scarce output, she's released only 4 albums since her Touchtone 1996 debut title, tend to be met with the kind of dazzled awe that usually only attends a rare comet or solar eclipse. And what a cosmic wonder she is on Fetch, churning through dense sonic experiments, tricky time signatures, lyrical pirouettes, and in a wild mosaic that feels both playful and urgent, melodic and chaotic, and always indelibly Fiona, down to the last fantastic note, by Leah Greenblatt. Number 2, After Hours, by The Weeknd. After's title feels more like more than fitting for the artist born Abel Tesfaye, whose reign as the brooding Sith Lord of modern pop finds its apex on this sleek, nocturnal mood piece, glassy, gorgeously falsettoed reflections on loneliness and alienation designed for dancing in the dark. Number 3, RTJ4, Run the Jewels. "F it, why wait?" wrote Killer Mike and LP after dropping their 4th album 2 days early. Why indeed? BLM protests had reached a boiling point, fascism was on the rise, and people were screaming for change. RTJ4 provided the moment with the bruising, brutal soundtrack it was looking for. Number 4, Rough and Rowdy Ways, by Bob Dylan. Dylan's best album in 14 years is a deadly affair, one of JFK's murder, of spare body parts at the morgue, of enemies being tossed into graves. His vocals are as dark and sturdy as his lyrics, sung with a lingering, blood-curdling delivery as they rumble across 12-bar blue numbers and shuffle beats. Number 5, Folklore, by Taylor Swift. Please picture me sitting in a seaside cottage listening to Taylor's quietly devastating 8th album, Repeat. Folklore broke all the rules the pop star had written for herself, arriving with little fanfare, Zero's Datingham singles, and captivating tales of dead socialites, war heroes, and fictional love triangles. Number 6, Gaslighter by the Chicks. The perfect album title for 2020. The perfect soundtrack for annihilating liars, cheats, cowards, tyrants, racists, homophobes, and people dumb enough to leave tights on boats. The perfect marriage of pop sheen, flinty sass, country fights, heavenly harmonies, and righteous rage. Number 7, Women in Music Part 3 by Haim. The family trio removed the clean edges from their first two albums and emerged with the kind of dusty, riffy rock record you might hear blasting out of your neighbor's window on a humid summer day. In a year filled with back-breaking news cycles, Women in Music delivered a necessary escape. Number 8, A Written Testimony by J. Electronica. If you're going to make fans wait 13 years for your first studio album, you better bring the goods. Electronica came fully stocked on Testimony, which overflows with the type of philosophical yarns and triple entendres that once made him rap's next great hope. A decade on, the title still holds. Number 9, YHLQMDLG by Bad Bunny. The Latin trap star's first project of 2020 made good on its title. The letters are an acronym, Yo Hago Lo Que Me De La Gana, that translates to I Do Whatever I Want, by breaking gender stereotypes, sampling The Girl from Ipanema, and combining the many flavors of reggae, past and present. Number 10, Untitled, Black Is by Salt. This mysterious British collective, collected by Michael Kiwanuka, we think, truly overachieved in 2020, releasing two albums of a beguiling melange of soul, dub, funk, reggae, trip-hop, folk, and hazy psychedelia. Of the pair, Black is vibrated on a higher plane, at once transporting and grounding. The worst musical mishaps. The tone-deaf celebrity sing-along. Famous folks performing John Lennon's Imagine from their mansions to help us forget COVID? Pass. A cringy rapper presidential campaign. Kanye's political run began with him claiming Harriet Tubman never freed the slaves. At least he conceded after the election. The concert crash. Venues closed, tours canceled, thousands out of work. The pandemic ravaged the live music biz, leaving fans pining for concerts. Dumbest use of an iconic protest song. Irony died when President Trump, who skipped the Vietnam War due to bone spurs, played CCR's Fortunate Son at rallies. Adventures in Technical Difficulties. It was a new jack swing and a miss for Teddy Riley in his first versus battle. No sound, no diggity, no doubt. Resist and Remix. Protest music in 2020 was a potent blend of old-school-styled anthems and new-school surprises by Alex Suskin. One of the prevailing, if short-sighted, beliefs following the 2016 election was that we were about to enter a boom for contemporary protest songs. Long had the Marvin Gaye's and Bob Dylan's reigned over sounds of dissent. It was time for a new generation to rally. Many did this summer with works tied directly to the Black Lives Matter marches, from the brutal lessons of H.E.R.'s I Can't Breathe, stripped of bloodlines, whipped and confined, this is the American pride. To the point-blank realism of little babies, the bigger picture. I find it crazy the police shoot you and know that you're dead, but still tell you to freeze. Others were made prior to the moment, but still fit the message, such as Run the Jewels, RTJ4. Look at all these slave masters posing on your dollar, rapped Killer Mike and LP Unjust. Then there were songs that had nothing to do with police brutality, including Pop Smoke's Dior, but still played in the streets. Brief respites amid the tear gas and arrests, and mixing straightforward anthems with songs that weren't. 2020 artists put their own stamps on protest music and showed that the sounds of a movement can be malleable as long as they bring people together. Great performances in music. Cardi B and Megan Thee Stallion, WAP music video. The year's most unsubtle NSFW clip sees Cardi and Meg resurrecting the gleeful raunch of 1990s hip-hop by traipsing around an Alice in Wonderland mansion in lingerie. Tongues, twerks, and slithering snakes abound. Neil Finn, Fangradio, the Crowded House frontman and latter-day Fleetwood Mac's vocalist, charged directly into the breach back in March to calm jangled nerves with his daily audio live streams of Crowded House classics and fun covers from Bowie to Prince. Chris Stapleton, Don't Fade on Me, from Tom Petty's 70th Birthday Bash tribute. With just his voice and guitar, the acclaimed country star exercises precise control of his powerful growl to distill the wintry essence of this exceptionally intimate Wildflowers track. Virtual Insanity. With concerts canceled and fans left at home holding unused tickets, musicians were forced to reconfigure what pandemic-era live music looks like. By Hillary Hughes. Devastating doesn't quite cover the global impact the pandemic had on the live music industry last year, with countless artists forced off the road and venues shuttered across the country. Yet, in spite of the blows, innovation reigned as musicians put unique spins, with a few socially distanced adjustments, on show business' oldest rule, the show must go on. Some redefined the concert experience to reach fans through their screens, like DJ D-Nice and his hashtag Club Quarantine sets. Super producers Swizz Beatz and Timbaland took things a step further, teaming up to launch Versus, a streaming series that matched legends from Patti LaBelle and Gladys Knight to RZA and DJ Premier in musical battles. Other artists invited audiences into their own abodes. For her ISO Lounging series, country singer-songwriter Amanda Shears and her husband, roots rocker Jason Isbell, outfitted their barn with candles and a stained glass backdrop, turning the space into a destination for intimate acoustic material. Chloe times Haley, meanwhile, completely reimagined the potential of an underutilized space, their tennis court, to maximize the production value of their home shot videos. Some, like Bad Bunny, preferred a safe-ish in-person approach, singing on top of a moving bus in the Bronx. Musicians also found ways to return to the familiar concert routine with a crowd-free twist. Foo Fighters played the Roxy in Los Angeles for a live stream benefit, as did Miley Cyrus at Whiskey A Go Go. The seats may have been empty during these gigs, but the message was clear. No matter the hurdles, performers will always find a way to play for their fans. Well, that's all the time we have for today. This has been Elizabeth Smith reading the January 2021 issue of Entertainment Weekly. I hope you enjoyed today's reading from the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, USA Today, followed by the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American at 3.
This is a Recording Library of West Texas Community Update.
West Campus Testing Site extends hours. Midland Health has received funding from the city that will allow extended hours for COVID-19 testing at Midland Memorial Hospital West Campus. The testing site will operate 8:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 12:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. weekdays, and 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturdays. Anyone who has been exposed or is symptomatic can call 68NURSE, 686-8773, to make an appointment at the drive-through testing site. The test is free for those who are scheduled. Insurance information will be collected from those who are insured, according to the release.
Texas began as a distinctive place, and it remains so today. In 1973, Texas Monthly Magazine was founded to cover all aspects of the Texas lifestyle.